calling. Now don't look to us, phony Beatlemania.
And welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly and Curtis Hurd making his debut. This episode, we'll be looking back at the disappointing 2-0 loss performed against Middlesbrough at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, and it looks like David's on the line with us. I'll first bring him on, and hopefully Curtis will be joining us in a few moments as well. David, how you doing?
Hello. Well, have felt better. Got a rotten virus, but nothing to compare with what I went through last year. So hopefully I'll be able to get through the show with you today.
You know what, David, I just hope you can, and just keep me updated on how you're feeling, my friend. And like I said, hopefully, you can get through this. And unfortunately, it looks like we are having some issues with Curtis getting in, and we might have an issue with him. It does not look like the Skype option is available for whatever reason. Hopefully it will become available so he can join us. But in the meantime, while we wait for him, and hopefully, like I said, hopefully he can join us, just share with me your opening thoughts on this 2-0 loss for Fulham.
Well, it's kind of quite a multifaceted game, really, because on one hand, you could say we deserved to lose. Middlesbrough deserved to win. They were the better team. On the other hand, when you look at the stats, when you look at the actual chances on goal, we actually could have got something out of it. So it was a match that we easily could have got a draw in for sure, even though I don't think we deserved it. It was really, it was a very flat performance, though. I think the early goals really killed the match, although a goal back at any time for Fulham really would have turned things around. It just wasn't quite, that there. It was just very, very flat. The crowd were very flat. The players really were. And it was also, I think there was a, early on especially, there was confusion with the system. And even when substitutes were made, people weren't quite sure who was meant to be where initially. It didn't have the same organisation about it that we've seen in recent weeks with a more organised Fulham approach. Certainly yesterday, it was an off day for the players and an off day, I think, for Slavica as well.
Yeah, listen, I hear you, David. It's unfortunate because this was an opportunity against a very good side that I believe is going to get promoted, and there's a lot to take out of it, and we will go through it in details in a little bit. We'll go through it, and it's an interesting situation, and like I keep going back to, there are opportunities here for Fulham to get something out of the match. Would they have deserved it? I don't know, because I think they were outplayed. And Ross McCormack talked about that as well. He felt that they were outplayed. I'm paraphrasing. He said that obviously Middlesbrough deserved to win the game. And listen, we're going to go through it, but it looks like Curtis might be with us. I'm going to bring him on. Hopefully he can hear us. Curtis, are you with us?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Curtis, welcome to Cottage Talk. I'm glad that we could get you on, my friend. On the line with us is David Holly.
Hi, David.
Hello. Hi, Curtis. Welcome to Cottage Talk.
Thank you very much.
Well, Curtis, listen, again, you've wanted to come on for a while, so I'm glad that we can make this happen. You are a young supporter. Before we go any further, just tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a season ticket holder. I've been for a few seasons now, and I've started supporting Fulham because my family, and that's it, really.
Okay, not a problem, my friend. All right. Listen, just enjoy yourself. We'll just be going through the match, and I just got David's thoughts, just opening thoughts on the match. Just share with me, summarize your thoughts on the match yesterday, the 2-0 loss.
First of all, I didn't really think there was much passion from any of the Fulham players apart from Scott Parker, really. No commitment, no desire to get to the ball, and it showed. And I thought certainly in the first 2 minutes when they scored that it was going to be one of them days, and it could be 5-0, 6-0 thrashing. But and it's very frustrating, I think, and it showed. And people around me in the Hammersmith end were saying it's frustrating as well, and which it really was, and we just lacked desire. and it really cost us. I think we picked up a bit in the second half though, but the first definitely wasn't the side that we wanted to see.
Curtis, very interesting, because something that you said I was feeling very early on, just watching it online, is that after that first goal, I thought it was going to be a long day. So I see where you're going on that. It was difficult, because we talked about on the preview show, David and I, that if you make a mistake, this team is going to punish you. And they punished us twice, and that was enough. And they don't give up many goals, Curtis. So I understand why you felt like that, and you said other supporters around you felt the same way?
Yeah, well, a few season ticket holders behind me and around me, and they were sort of saying the same things that I was thinking, that it was going to be a long day. It was frustrating. We kept the ball a bit, I think 58% possession in the first half, but we gave them the opportunity to score, and one of the best wingers in the league, he's going to take it any day. So I don't think it was good enough, and I don't think it was frustrating, and everyone else watching the match, I think they thought the same thing as well.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, we're going to go through this, and let's start with the starting 11. David, I'm going to go back to you. You and I talked off air about the starting 11 when you saw it. So what was going through your mind?
Well, we knew that Stearman was likely to come in, and as we said on the preview show, I felt that meant he's going to stick with a 3-5-2 kind of formation. And when we saw the starting line, obviously the big thing that was different to that was the fact that Dembele was on the bench and Tunnicliffe was selected. And you know, I've tweeted out, what's he going to do here? Is it going to be a 3-5-1-1, i.e. with just Kearney playing off McCormack, with kind of the three of Baird and Tunnicliffe and Parker across the middle, which I thought was sounding the most likely, because I thought, this is what he wants to do here. He wants to put in an extra defensive shield, an extra man in the middle there. So we'd have five people across the middle, effectively, and we should be very strong there. And that's what I kind of expected to be, because I didn't expect what actually did happen, because I didn't think what happened would be the right way to go. And it seemed to be right, because it was just total chaos, really, early on. In fact, we started with playing almost, you call it a square four in midfield, if that makes sense. We had, you know, rather than having a diamond, we had a square with Parker and Baird at the back of the square, and Tunnicliffe with Kearney at the front of the square. Kearney playing as a cam in a very strange role, playing off McCormack there. So I tweeted out, in fact, we're playing 3-4-2-1 to be precise, is what it was. The other thing of note, when I sort of tweeted at kickoff, was the way that the back three had come out. I thought really that Stearman would just go like for like into the left centre back role that Amabieta normally would play in, just to minimise the disruption to everyone else. But no, it was strange that he came into the right centre back role. Maddle shifted over one, and Burns shifted over one. And that seems strange that Maddle was the main kind of central holding defender, centre-back, who was doing most of the marking duties. And in fact, Byrne and Stearman were free. And they, you know, it just didn't look quite right for whatever reason. But, you know, initially I thought, well, that's it, we'll see how it goes, as I did with Tunnicliffe. But it was clear to me that these, you know, the one enforced change of Stearman coming in and the change he decides to make, bringing Tunnicliffe in, it just really just didn't work. It disrupted the whole system, and I put our sort of bad start down to that partially, that it just, we weren't the same team that we had been.
David, let me ask you, do you think if Amorebieta was available, do you think things would have been different? Obviously, he was not available for this match.
Well, it's impossible to say, but I certainly think the defence would have been more organised, because they have been looking more organised of late. But we started off like the old Fulham, really, how we start badly and concede early possessions and early goals. Just take you back to the Ipswich match, wasn't it? 18 seconds, when no one kind of even knew who was playing where. Even there was this argument, if you remember, were we playing 4-4-2 or were we playing 3-5-2? Because
I remember.
You know, it didn't. No one seemed to know who was where, and Dan Byrne was out of position, and everyone else was out of position, and they walked through us. And it was a bit like that really yesterday. I think that I don't believe we would have conceded such an easy goal had Amel Bieta been there. You know, he would have. You know, if he'd had to foul Adamo in the box to stop him scoring, he would have done it. But he would have been there, I think, Amel Bieta.
Right. Now, very, very interesting. I just throw that out there because, unfortunately, he was not available for this match. And, Curtis, I'm going to go to you because the one thing that David really mentioned that stood out for me was the back three. The fact that Mattel was in the middle, and then you had Byrne on the left, and you had why am I blanking on who was on the right? But
Stearman.
Stearman on the right.
Yeah.
And when I first saw Mike Gregg, our co-host, talk about this on Twitter, that's how we saw it warming up as that being the back three. I thought that was strange. I did not get that. Did that go through your mind when you saw the starting 11? You saw that the back three and lined up that way.
Well, yeah, but the first thing that came to my mind when I saw it was same as David's. What's happening up front? We dropped Dembele. Is it going to be a 4-3 with wing backs and then the two in midfield with the one, you know, defensive midfielder, the two up front, or was it going to be 1-1? But I don't know, really. It's just started very confusingly and it didn't really work. David was picked up on it. I picked up on it. And, you know, Baird looked like he took Scott Parker's usual position, just playing a bit deeper than the centre mids. But that's what I saw. But Kearney played centre mid and obviously O'Hara was dropped. And it just didn't really look like a team that was settled. But I think dropping Dembele was a big talking point because he's lacked form recently, despite he can poach well and get something out of nothing, if that makes sense. And linking him with Ross McCormack has been a deadly partnership in the Championship this year. Ross McCormack, obviously, he started up front, but with a strike partner, no, it didn't look like it. And he didn't really work up front alone.
You know, it's funny because that was obviously the other major talking point was the fact that Ross McCormack was going to be by himself up front. And, Curtis, the one thing that I noticed when I watched back a second time, Tom Kearney has been our spark. And they were prepared for this. They were prepared. They had their two defensive midfielders basically all over him whenever he got the ball. There seemed to be at some points three or four players around Kearney. They were not going to allow Kearney to dictate the game. That was the one thing that I noticed. But so let me ask both of you, do you think it was a mistake going with only one up front? First to you, Curtis.
Yeah, I definitely think so. McCormack, he's been scoring, but with a partner. I don't think if you want to take that away from him, then give him a chance, but I think we knew how it was going to end, really, the start. He's a good assist man as well, and people in the team give him the ball and expect him to score, but if he's the only one up there, he has to get the ball before he can look up, and I don't know, really. It's just the starting 11 was a bit confusing, as I said. It just completely didn't work. And
agree with David that the players didn't really know their roles?
No.
Or did it seem like they knew their roles?
Well, when Fredericks came off, I think it was 25 minutes in or something like that, we had Ryan Tunnicliffe going to the right, we had Stearman going to the right, we didn't know who was playing there, we didn't know if Ryan Tunnicliffe was starting up front, playing behind the striker in Cam centre forward, or what he was doing. We didn't know the formation full stop, and it was just very confusing. It was a tactical mistake by Slavica, and none of them knew what they were doing, what their individual roles were, and as a team collectively, I don't know what you said to them before the match in the dressing room, but certainly didn't work. And the goal down after 2 minutes proved that it didn't work, really.
Yeah. No, listen, I hear what you're saying, my friend. David, back over to you. But before I go to you, I'm going to read a quote from Ross McCormack that talks about the match a little bit. I want to get your thoughts on this because I think it kind of goes to what we're talking about, how they were trying to find another way. And, again, this is right from the Fulham website. This is a quote from McCormack after the match. Quote, "The hardest part was for the boys to get the ball into the forwards with the two Middlesbrough players screening in front of the defense. But that's when you've got to show a bit more experience and try to find other ways to get to them. All credit to them. They were excellent." He's obviously talking about Middlesbrough. And he said the better side won this match. But David, what are your thoughts about what McCormack shared after the match?
Well, the original question was about, you know, was it a mistake to rest Dembele? Now, had they brought in Tanikif or whoever to perform a specific role, which was successful, then I'd say, yeah, it was a good move, that we got extra protection for the defence, we were more creative in midfield, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't, because Tynecliffe was a bit part player for the whole match. He didn't have anything really to do as a cam. It didn't look like it suited him. He looked very uncomfortable there. He then was shifted to right wing back, and he looked equally uncomfortable there. And as Curtis said, there was a point in the match, and I'm sure you saw it as well, that I was wondering who was actually the right wing back, because Richard Stearman seemed to be having a go at it at one point. He seemed to be trying to take people on down the right and everything, show that
point.
He actually could play the ball. Obviously, clearly, I think Stearman was desperate yesterday, that he'd got his chance to get back in the team. He wanted to show that maybe, you know, he could replace Amabieta. And he did, you know. He got a red card straight up, first game out. So, you know, perfect replacement for Amabieta. Even better, even Amabieta doesn't normally mention manage a red card in his first game. But clearly, Stearman was trying to impress. And I think he bit off more than he could chew, Stearman, unfortunately. He tried to do too much. And he paid the price for it. But, you know, for Ross McCormack's point of view, the service wasn't really there. But saying that, we did create some chances, and we created really as many chances as Middlesbrough did by one way or another, and from strange sort of sources. You know, the long throw was incredibly successful yesterday, really, in terms of causing damage and danger. We did look dangerous from it, and that's not normally something that we would try or we'd do, but at least we did try something different. But in the main,
yeah,
very, very disorganised. It didn't work having Tynecliffe in the middle, and when he was at wing back, he was hardly in the game, Tynecliffe. He was, you know, lost really out there. You know, Ryan Fredericks seems to play that role quite well, but if Ryan Fredericks isn't there, then I don't know what. You know, I was wholly expecting, obviously Fredericks should have gone off sooner than he did. That was poor as well, to keep him on when he couldn't walk, let alone run. He's given them the second goal almost by, they played a simple ball inside him, which he can't chase. You know, if he can't run like that, he shouldn't have been there. He should have either been down on the pitch getting treatment, or he should have been subbed, unfortunately, because we were just left in a hole there. And I thought, well, this means, you know, he's going to bring on Jazz Richards, unfortunately, and he's going to put him there, and you know, because he's the next closest thing you would imagine to playing that right wing-back role. But no,
that's what I thought was coming on.
Yeah, well, then he moves Tynecliffe to the right and brings on Dembele. So basically, in one fell swoop, he said, you know, I've screwed up here. You know, I should have two forwards on. Having one forward on is rubbish. Having Tynecliffe as a cam is rubbish. All I can do, therefore, is bring Dembele on, go back to a more sort of typical 3-5-2 or 3-4-1-2, and Tynecliffe will have to kind of pay the price by, by filling in at right wing back, just as, you know, so we can reorganise him and play with two strikers again. I mean, it smacked a bit of desperation and disorganisation, and it was very disappointing for me to see Slavica kind of tactically inept, really, and out-thought in that spell yesterday.
You know, David, it's okay for us to be critical of Slavica. I think Slavica is going to end up being a very good head coach for Fulham Football Club, but it's okay for all three of us to say, you know what, he got this one wrong. Mike Gregg tweeted that out as well. It's okay, and I think we're all in agreement that he got this one wrong to start the match. For whatever reason, he got this one wrong. And it's, you know, that's our opinion. You know, I shouldn't speak specifically for you guys, but I think he got it wrong. It sounds like the two of you agree with that. Is that fair to say, David, that he got the tactics wrong?
Certainly. I mean, he said he was going to make us stronger. But in fact, he replaced, you know, our second highest goal scorer, who provides a threat up front and puts pressure on them, with a guy just back from injury playing a role that he isn't accustomed to. So it didn't make us stronger at all. We were much less strong offensively, and we were no stronger defensively. So got it badly wrong, I'm afraid.
Okay, very good there. David and Curtis, just to finish this up before we really dive into the match, you've already said that you believe that he got it wrong with the tactics. Anything else you want to share on that?
No, not really. It's just possibly Ross McCormack up front, and whether he was disrupted by Burrow's interest and that they had a transfer rejected for him. And obviously he put in a transfer request, I believe. So did he really want to play that match? Because he didn't play that well. He didn't look that bothered, and it was just a case of whether he wants to be there or not. But look, Dembele being dropped is possibly a excuse for him, but I don't know if he wants to be here still. He signed a new contract, but is it for money? Is it he doesn't want to be at the club, I don't think. And whether he actually got convinced by Slavica Jokanović and maybe Shahi Khan when he was on in at Motspur Park in the past week, does he want to be there? Is there a new exciting project happening, or is it just the usual, we're trying to get a few transfers in the summer and climb the league, but still not happening. Just a wage hike, I think. And I was a bit annoyed to see that he signed a new contract.
David, let me go to you, because it sounds like Curtis feels a little bit similar to you about Ross McCormack.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you heard the show I did on Friday, the previous show.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, I was one of the only sort of people who spoke out against. Most people have been happy that Ross has signed a new, better contract and committed to Fulham, supposedly. But, you know, he already had a very good contract beforehand, which had been enhanced last summer. And now we're giving him even more money and the option to keep him for a further season. I just felt it was a bit of a smack in the face from only a few weeks ago, where apparently he said he wants to leave the club,
mm-hmm.
So suddenly now he's being rewarded for his loyalty, and I'm asking, what is the loyalty here?
Okay, very good there. Very good by both of you. Feel free, like I said, I want you guys to share your opinion on this. I do want to mention, David, just so you know, in the article that's about what Ross McCormack had to say, he does talk about the chances as well, so just to be fair, he does talk about that Fulham did have opportunities to score as well. So just to be even on that. But guys, let's now go and let's break down this match. And what we'll do is we'll break it into two halves, obviously. And I'll just get your observations from the first and second half. Let's start with the first half. And, Curtis, I'll start with you. I'll just share a couple of key moments, and you can talk about them. Obviously, we're talking early on, the second-minute goal by Albert Adoma.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this, when you watch back the goal, and I've watched back a few times, on the commentary from gentleman Sean Davis. Sean Davis said that he believed that this was Dan Burns' man. So just keep that in mind. That's what he had to say. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm just saying that Sean Davis actually said on the broadcast that he believed that Dan Burns should have had Albert Adoma, and that actually it started with his clearance that was intercepted by Middlesbrough, and they went down, obviously, the cross by Downing, which led to Albert Adoma's goal. And then in the 18th minute, you have the penalty on the foul by Chris Baird, on David Nugent and Grant Ledbetter made it 2-0. Definitely want your thoughts on that. And right after the goal, Ryan Fredericks was then taken off and they brought on Moussa Dembele. Now, Fulham did have a few opportunities to score in the 39th minute. You had the – it started from a free kick. You had the Moussa Dembele overhead kick that was tipped over the crossbar by the Middlesbrough goalkeeper. And then only 2 minutes later, you had Michael Mantle's header getting cleared off the line by Richie Dalot. Two decent opportunities by Fulham in the first half. All right, Curtis, what did you see in the first half? What are your observations?
Well, the first goal really was a major defending error. There was no one there marking him. Dan Burn should have been. No one was even challenging for the ball. Lonergan couldn't have done anything. And like I said earlier, the top winger in the league, he's going to snap that opportunity up and he's going to score that, no problem. To be fair, though, for Downing's cross, it was a good cross and it was pitch perfect for Doma, I think the player's name is, to score. But apart from that, Maddie's header off the line, that was, I watched that on replay and it was very close to say the least. Dembele's header, I think Dembele's overhead kick from Dan Burn's header down to him. I think that was defended comfortably by their goalkeeper. Tipped over the bar. Wasn't really anything that was that hard for him. We didn't really look like scoring at any point, really. Maddie's header was obviously the closest. And we didn't have a passage of play where we were constantly attacking, knocking on their door and trying to score. But they're a top side in the league, and whether they go and win the league or not, that'll be deciding soon, and come the end of the season we'll know. But what we saw from the Fulham players in the first half just wasn't good enough. There was no desire, none at all, none to go and get the ball, to tackle. And if it wasn't for Michael Maddill in the first half when the ball dropped to one of their attackers, it could have been three goals down. And it just wasn't what we wanted to see, really, from any Fulham player. There was no one looked like they were playing for the badge, really, which was a bit disappointing, apart from Parker, maybe, but still, think they should have played a lot better. Might be top of the league or there and thereabouts, but we proved that we can beat teams. Norwich last year, we beat them 1-0 at home. Sean Cavahan, Derby last year, beat them 2-0 at home, and we played against the top sides in the league well this season. I don't think we've won against the top or the top two or three, but we played well, and so I would definitely expect to see much, much better performance, to say the least. However, we did almost score in the first half with Michael Maddill,
sure.
But we didn't look like we were going to, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, Curtis.
But there's just no desire, which I was so disappointed to see, and it was definitely getting to half time as quick as possible because this could be a thrashing.
Okay, very good there, Curtis. Before I go to David, I want to get your thoughts on the situation which led up to the second goal, the penalty. Did you get a good look at the foul by Chris Baird on David Nugent? Do you think that was the right call?
Definitely clipped him, but nothing Baird could really do, I'm afraid. It's just one of them things, one of them decisions by the ref that was, I think, right. And I think on the replay on Channel 5, I think it was right as well. However, Baird couldn't do anything, so I don't think you can blame Baird, but he just clips him. Nothing you can really do about that, and obviously the penalty tucked away by Ledbetter, and can't blame Lonergan either.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. was interesting about the penalty, and I just want to mention this before I go to David. Both gentlemen Jim and Sean Davis said it was a penalty. It's difficult to look at from the camera view that you got on television. It's, you know, it's tough because it looks like he potentially fouled him, but I personally think that the player went down way too easy and was looking for it. But that's just my thoughts on it. But I understand why it was called. David, over to you. Thoughts on the first half?
Well, obviously, we started very badly. We didn't find any sort of shape. Dan Burner's ventured a little bit forward. He's tried to play that ball, and he's ended up giving it away. Left a hole there in defence. And I think I saw Mike was quite critical of Garbutt, because I think Mike feels that Garbutt should have dropped back, seeing that there was that hole on the left side of our defence where Dan Burner had been. But obviously, play developed to a situation, and Stuart Downing, got a good cross over in front of Stearman to the back post. Of course, Stearman had gone out towards the right wing. So Maddle and Byrne have both gone to the near post and left Adoma completely unmarked at the back post. So by rights, it was Dan Byrne's man, and it was Dan Byrne's error that started it. But you have to question also why Garbutt hadn't, tracked back really as well, seeing that there was a space there. That's part
Fair
of
enough.
The duties of playing the wing-back role. You play 3-5-2, but as I said lots of times, when you're defending, it's got to be five at the back, not three at the back. And so you expect these guys to get back, and he wasn't back. There was a big hole there. Free header for Adoma. 1-0 down before we've hardly even settled. And then we've had the injury to Fredericks. He's taken a massive knock. And he's struggling to run around. He's struggling, And it was obvious to all of us that either he's going to need attention or he's going to have to go off. And yet play continued. Nothing was done. And they've played the ball again down that same sort of channel on our right-hand side. Cross has come over. I think Chris Baird has tried to step out of the way. And David Nudens made sure that, he's touched Chris Baird. Whether Chris Baird touched him or whether Nudens left his foot in there deliberately, I don't know. But if there was any contact, it was minimal, and it was certainly not proportional to the great dive that Nugent, with his arms up, put in. It was a massive overreaction, and when I've ever refereed a match, if anyone makes such a fuss like that, I wouldn't give the penalty on principle, really, even if it's been sized down, I think, because it's just too much. But I didn't think there was enough in it for me. I think he was looking for the penalty. I wouldn't have given it myself. And I've seen mixed views. Quite a lot of people have said the same on Twitter this morning. Obviously, we're biased, perhaps we're Fulham fans. Had it been the other way around, we would maybe be screaming for it. I don't know. I wasn't convinced, though, that it was a penalty. But you can understand why the ref's given it.
Yeah.
And then we're 2-0 down, obviously. But apart from that, I don't remember Lonergan being tested too much that half, although Middlesbrough were comfortable. But as Curtis said, we weren't really asking any questions. We weren't really knocking their door. We didn't have any sort of any sustained period of good play at all. It just came from, obviously, we had the set pieces again, really, wasn't it? When we've had the one that, say, Burner's headed down, good overhead kick, great contact by Dembele, but however, it's gone straight central to the middle of the goal. It's been a fairly comfortable tip over the goalkeeper. I was hoping you were going to say his name, actually, Russ, but you sidestepped that one as well.
Totally. David, I'm not going there.
And then, excuse me. And then, of course, we've had the second set piece, and great delivery to the back post where Maddle's actually unmarked. He's cleared the final minutes with defender. Great header back, beating the goalkeeper. And I watched it, and I could see from the angle that Richie Delap clears the ball over the bar that it the ball couldn't have been over the line, much as there was a few protests because the ball has gone backwards over the bar very slightly. If you know what I mean. So
yep.
He certainly cleared it before it had gone over the line, but it was close and it was definitely going in. That would have been maybe in some ways unjustified, I don't know, but a foothold back into the game, really, had that one gone in. But as I say, we didn't have any sustained real pressure or chances other than that, or no periods of play. It was just we had the ball, and we did have more possession, I believe, but we weren't hurting in the slightest. They were just able to, you know, with their 2-0 lead, you know, play sensibly and take the sting out of the game, and we didn't have any questions for them.
I think that's a fair assessment there, David, really. You know, especially like both of you are talking about, it's not like we had any dominant period. I think near the end of the match, when we talk about the second half, there was a period of time where Fulham were asking some questions. But really, in the first half, they were cruising. Let's call it what it was. They were cruising. And let's not go to the second half. I'll go right back to you, David. And let me just start by saying that Middlesbrough actually had some very good opportunities to score. I'm not going to go through them, but there was one that stood out to me with a nice challenge by Scott Parker, really putting himself out there. So I want to give Scott credit for that. They had a few opportunities. Just want to highlight a couple substitutions in the 57th minute. Zachariah Labiad came on from Chris Baird. About 11 minutes later, Jamie O'Hara comes on for Ryan Tunnicliffe. Now, the two major opportunities for Fulham to score came late in the match in the 81st minute. You had the opportunity from Jamie O'Hara, and when you watch it back on replay, you will notice that Jamie O'Hara actually, there was handball. That's why the flag went up. So it wouldn't have counted anyways, but he still should have put it in the back of the net. That was unfortunate. In the 83rd minute, off of a long throw, some very good long throws by Fulham in this match, Moussa Dembele's shot from the center box went over the net, and I thought he should have done better here, but went over the net. And then, of course, in the 86th minute, you have Richard Stearman showing a straight red card, and you guys can share your thoughts on that. But, David, I'll start with you on the second half.
Well, yeah, I mean, we certainly, I think we did ask more questions in the second half, but again, you know, not enough. It was, we didn't really have, you know, the formation wasn't working in our favour. We had Tunnicliffe as right wing back, but as I say, he wasn't really, you know, acting like a wing back should. He was sort of holding his position rather than making these bursting runs like Tunnicliffe does. Like Fredericks does. Sorry, got too many Ryans there. Garbutt, likewise, wasn't really creating much width for us. And midfield-wise, we had defensive players sitting there, not a lot of creativity. I thought Dembele and McCormack both had quiet games as well in the main, although Dembele was involved in a couple of good chances. But, you know, we had this, obviously the one you talked about there, the situation with O'Hara. I didn't notice any flag for anything or any decision given, but I did think it was handball. The ball fell to him rather kindly, and I think it hit his hand accidentally. So really, whether that's given a handball, I don't know, because it wasn't as if he's deliberately controlled the ball with his hand, but I think the ball hit his hand because he was trying to burst through to a loose ball, and he's got through. You know, and Fulham on their Fulham official feed described it as being inches wide, but it was a lot of inches wide. It wasn't even that close, not really. It dragged it quite wide of the post. From that angle, it was quite wide of the post, you know. It was a good foot wide or so, I think. So you should have been hitting the target there. Now, the one with Dembele, that was, I think, from one of those long throws that I've been talking about, where Dan Byrne was getting to the near post and causing a bit of mayhem. And it's fell, you know, and he swiveled around and hit it on the volley, Dembele, and he's connected well, but he's got to be hitting the target from that range, really. You know, any time a goal in the second half, I thought if we can get one back here, you know, we could cause a bit of a surprise maybe. You know, thinking about, you know, making Middlesbrough change their game plan. But unfortunately, we never found the net, so they never needed to change their game plan. And they were always there just waiting for us to make a mistake, like we talked about. And,
yep.
You know, a couple of times they broke away. Excellent, excellent block by Scott Parker.
Excellent.
The oldest man out there for us, by far. Well, not by far anymore with Baird, I guess, but still the oldest man out there. And he's, you know, it looked like a certain goal, really, opportunity for Stuart Downing, and he's thrown himself down, and, you know, he does that, Scott Parker. You know, he's not frightened to do that. There was more than one occasion yesterday where he threw himself in to get blocks in and you know, defuse a dangerous situation. And then, of course, you come to the Stearman situation. Stearman trying to play football when maybe, you know, he just needed to be sensible. He's miscontrolled it. He slipped. Jordan Rhodes is coming through like an express train. He's taking him out. And although it's a long, long way from goal, Jordan Rhodes would have been clear. And I looked at the replay just to make sure. And he would have had a good sort of five-yard head start on anyone else. And it would have led to a one-on-one situation with Lonergan. And therefore, it was denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. And the ref was right to give a red card for it. It seems harsh. People say, oh, well, it's a long way from goal. Because we had the same thing against QPR. Dan Byrne was the last man and took someone out. And only got a yellow. And I think myself and Yanis on that day both said, actually, we think it should have been red.
Right.
And that was a lot closer to goal. The only question was on that day was whether there was any people who could cover. People talk about the last man situation. That's rubbish. The rule doesn't say anything about the last man or how far you are from goal. All the rule says, whether it's it's a law, actually. Of course, it's laws of football. Denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. So if an obvious goal-scoring opportunity is denied, then it's a red card, unfortunately. And I think it was, and I think the ref got that one right. And, you know, much as it was a bit of a comical incident in a way, Stearman had to go, unfortunately. And I think for the last few minutes, then any chance we did have of throwing the kitchen sink at them to try and get something, you know, was lost.
Yeah, it was over at that point, David, when he went off. And any last-minute chance by Fulham was gone with the red card, unfortunately. All right, over to you, Curtis. What were your observations of the second half?
Well, not a lot, really. If I'm honest, there wasn't really much to talk about, much talking points as the first half, in my opinion. There wasn't any goals, obviously, but I thought the best chance went to O'Hara. I didn't see the handball or anything, and I didn't know what the linesman flagged at. But he was straight through on goal, and as David said, he should have scored. If it was offside or not, handball, sorry, or not,
yep,
he should have scored.
I agree.
He was in a clear opportunity, and he should have done better. No question about it. But they didn't really look like scoring as much as they did in the first half. And we probably looked like scoring a bit more, to be honest. There was a couple of chances where I think McCormack did a back heel to Dembele, to Tom Kearney, and then won the player's shot. I think it might have been Scott Parker or O'Hara or someone, but and that got blocked, but that was probably the best bit of football that was being played, attacking-wise. There wasn't really anything to talk about, apart from, obviously, Richard Stearman getting a red card, which, definitely a red card. I think he wanted to block Jordan Rhodes, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, Jordan Rhodes' path, and he did so, and he got the red. So apart from that, nothing really to talk about, I don't think.
Okay, my friend, not very good analysis by both of you on this match, and let's now move and let's talk about the stats in the section I call Stat Attack. And Curtis, I'll start with you. I'm just going to read through the stats from the match. This is a combination. I got some stats from the Fulham website and some other stats from whoscored.com, but it's all on this match. And I'll just start with possession. Fulham actually had more possession at 55% to 45% shots. This one actually surprised me. Middlesbrough only had one more shot than Fulham, 13 to 12. On target, again, they only had one more shot on target, 3 to 2. Passing success, Fulham actually had a larger passing success at 80% to 74%. Key passes were even at 8. Overall passes, Fulham actually had more at 515 to 405. Crosses, Fulham led there 18 to 17. Long balls, Fulham had 78 to 72. Short passes, Fulham had more than 100 more than Middlesbrough, 418 to 315. Aerial duels won, Fulham led that 21 to 13. Duels won, Fulham led that as well, 54 to 40. Tackles, Fulham had 18 and Middlesbrough had 11. All right, Curtis, to you. What stands out from you from the statistics in this match?
Well, first and foremost, you have to go to the one that you know, that dictates the game, sorry, the most, possession, I think. And under Slavica Jokanovic, we've started passing the ball a bit more, we've started using the width and having that possession. And since he's come in, I think there's only been one or two games where we've had less possession than the opposition. And I think that really is an improvement, as in when we have the ball, obviously they can't score. So if we keep the ball longer, find a way into the game, relax under with it, and then move it forward and get some attacks going from it, I think that's a good build up. And the total shots also surprised me. And with Middlesbrough, you said 13 and us having 12.
Yeah.
I can't remember 12 at all. So I was surprised by that. And shots on target, 2 out of 12 really. Not really very good. Not good at all. So I was disappointed by that.
Okay, very good there, my friend.
Yeah.
Anything else stand out to you before I go to David?
We conceded 11 corners, which proves how... Actually, we didn't concede by a corner, which is an improvement. Though, conceding 11 is quite a lot. And considering we had 3, then we need to stop giving corners away, don't we? So, because that's where we're vulnerable. I know we improved, but I can remember going up to Sheffield Wednesday away and conceding 3 corners. And when you concede from free kicks and corners, and it's something that needs to be sorted, and we sort of sorted it, but we need to help ourselves really a bit and don't concede them.
You know what, Curtis, thank you for mentioning that. I forgot to mention it. It's actually a stat David likes to look at a great deal. That is telling. 11 corners to 3. I'm glad that you mentioned that. That is something that we definitely should be talking about. I'm glad that you mentioned that. David, over to you. What stands out from you with these stats? I'm glad that that Curtis mentioned corners. I know you like to look at them, and that really tells a little bit of a story.
Well, the corner count was slightly skewed because we had that at the end. There was like sort of about 3 corners on the trot where Middlesbrough were playing keep ball in the corner and we were putting it out. But still, you know, when you look at the corners and you look at the possession, that's kind of my rough rule of thumb, and says, you know, obviously their possession was in more dangerous areas than ours, perhaps, because possession on itself appears that we have more of the ball, and obviously we did, but it's where it counts, you know, and the fact they got much more corners than us suggests that they were getting up our end of the pitch much more than we were getting up theirs. But, you know, these stats, they can be so misleading as well, because in a lot of ways it looks like a very even match, total number of shots.
It does.
Shots on target. But then some of the stuff is, I almost say it's rubbish, that the stats actually create a false picture. You know, for example, attacking passes, we had 202 to their 165. So we were better, supposedly, than they were. Pass accuracy, 79-73. Again, we were better. Accurate passes, 393 to 300. Who actually makes these numbers up? Are they telling the truth? Can we actually trust these? You know, successful aerial duels, 21 to 13. You know, we're killing them. According to these stats, we've been killing them. You know, we're winning everything in the air. We're passing much more than they are. We're more accurate than they are. We've got more attacking passes than they have. So why the hell have we lost the game 2-0? You know, what's going on here? So, you know, the stats, they really can be very misleading sometimes. And I do start to wonder if these stats are actually put together by Gentleman Jim or something, you know, someone with a massive bias towards Fulham. Because,
oh, I don't think so, David.
No, but you look at these stats and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really...
It doesn't
look,
it doesn't match
it doesn't
what
paint
you guys
the picture
watched.
Of yesterday.
It doesn't paint
the picture of yesterday where we were second best, really, I think, in, you know, across in all areas. We were second best. That's why we lost the game. They were up for it. They had a better urgency. They pressed us. We didn't press them as much as they pressed us. And yet the stats suggest it was an even match, and if anything, in a lot of categories, we were the better team. So I'll put it to you, Russ, the stats yesterday are rubbish.
Okay, and honestly, David, I'm not going to disagree with you because I don't think they paint a proper picture of what you guys watched and what I watched online. It definitely doesn't, but there are things that you can take out of it, like Curtis was mentioning, that you can see improvement. Listen, we still have more possession. That's something to look at. I know it's what you do with the possession, like you're talking about, David. But moving forward, there are some positive things that come out of it, but it is very misleading. This is not an even match. This was far from being an even match, and the stats make it look that way. So in this match, yes, David, I agree with you. The majority of these stats are rubbish. I'm going to agree with you. It kills me to do that, but I have to agree with you. All right. We've got about a little less than 10 minutes left for the show. And, David, can we, and I know you're not feeling that great. Can you quickly rate the players?
Yeah, it's fine. All of them now in one go, yeah.
All in one go. If something stands out that you want to say, just throw it in there, and then I'll go to Curtis.
Oh, I'm going to give Lonergan a box down to 6. Didn't have very much to do, really. Did what he could adequately. Otherwise, that was it. So 6 out of 10. Back 3, Spearman. Tried much too hard to impress. Made some terrible mistakes. Got himself sent off. I'm going to be generous and give him a 5, actually. I don't know why. Maddle, the best of the 3 centre-backs, definitely. Still looked the most organised. Difficult for him in the middle, marking Nugent at times. Great effort, first half, nearly scored 7 for me. Dan Byrne, although Spearman got himself sent off, I think Dan Byrne looked the most put out by everything, really. Just looked like a fish out of water playing in that left centre-back role. Got beaten several times, got made to look stupid, unfortunately, by Adama and Nugent and people. Obviously led to the first goal, his mistake. I'm going to give him a 4, I'm afraid. Wing backs, I don't think we rate Ryan Fredericks. He wasn't on the pitch long enough to rate him, really.
No, don't rate him. Okay.
Garbett, mediocre at best, really. Didn't come back to help when he should have done. Didn't really offer a lot going forward either. 5 out of 10 for me. Baird, huffed and puffed. Gave away a penalty, 5.5. Parker, star of the show really for me yesterday, still was up for it. Unlike most people, he was my man of the match, 8 out of 10. Tunnicliffe was lost really, was out of place as a cam, was out of place as a wing back. Did try but had no effect really, 5 out of 10 for me also. Kearney, couple of little nice involvements, but was heavily marked, as we said. And also, I think the change in kind of formation or players upset him as well. But I'm going to give him a 6. Dembele didn't look very interested. Good overhead kick. Should have scored with the other one. I'm giving him 5. Likewise, Ross wasn't, he was put out by it. I don't know if it was his new contract, if it was a bad day at the office or what, but I'm going to give him 5 as well. In terms of the subs, well, I've given Dembele obviously a mark there. Also, Labiad, I think I'm going to give him a 5. Did absolutely nothing to impress me at all. Looked very weak. Expect more from him. And O'Hara, likewise, really. Came on, didn't do a lot at all. Missed a good chance, whether it was off, whether it was handball or not. 5 as well for me for O'Hara.
Okay, very good there, David. Curtis, over to you, and just go through rating the players. Obviously, you don't have to rate Fredericks because he wasn't really on long enough. And then at the end, also mention while you do your rating who your man of the match was.
Yep. Well, first of all, Lonergan, give him a 6. Played okay. Couldn't really have done anything for the first goal, and saved it later on with Jordan Rose for own goal. Byrne, like David said, from the left side, he didn't really look that comfortable. So he didn't really do anything. The best thing he did all day, really, was give the header to Moussa's overhead kick. So give him a 5. Maddle, I agree with David on this one. He looked by far the most comfortable out of all the centre-backs. So I'll give him a 7. And obviously, one thing that stood out for me, when the ball took an odd bounce in the first half, he was first to react to his firm players and made a fantastic tackle. Stearman, 3. He played terrible. And the Fulham team without him the last few weeks have looked much better. And I wouldn't bring him back in the first team if I had a choice. I'd even give Hutchinson a go over him.
I agree with you, Curtis. Go ahead.
Yeah. And Garbutt, nothing really to mention about, to be honest. Tried to make a couple of runs around the back. Crossing was poor, didn't do anything. Kearney, 6. I've come to like Tom Kearney, actually, in recent games. His creative players, the Fulham players, getting much better. But nothing excited me yesterday. He always had that player on his back. Like
always.
We said earlier on, he always had that. And Middlesbrough, to be fair to them, they did their homework and they saw that he was the key man to mark in the midfield.
Curtis, they took him out of the match, Curtis, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, they did. Baird, 6, didn't really do anything. Again, no one really did anything, if I'm honest, but the penalty, I don't think he could have done anything. Still think it's a fantastic bit of business, though, from Savisa Jokanović, as he's the leader, basically. He captained Derby. He might not have got the best of time there, but he did captain. He's had experience, and he's 34, I think, now. He's been around a bit, and he's got the leadership. He's a bit like Scott Parker, really. He's the type of leader that we needed, and we've lacked that, I think. And so Parker, again, I agree with David on this one. 8, man of the match. He did about the same as Maddo, if not a bit better, so I'll give him an 8. Tony Cliff looked really uncomfortable. 5. He didn't really know which role he's playing. McCormack, 6. Uninterested. Subs. Dembele, 6. Only thing really was he put a bit of pressure on them. Didn't really look interested. Did that overhead kick, but that was comfortably saved. Labyad ran at the defenders, had an ambitious shot that was over the bar by Miles. Could have played much better, really. And I was expecting to see much better performance from him. And O'Hara, last one, give him a 5.
Okay, very good there, Curtis. Very good. All right, guys, to wrap up the show, let's talk about Savisa. And, David, I want you to rate Savisa for this match. Listen, when we think he does a good job, he obviously gets a good rating. When we don't think he did a good job, and it's okay to criticize the Fulham head coach, you got to give him a rating. So, David, I'm curious what your rating is going to be for Savisa in this match.
Well, I've got to try and be consistent, even though I'm the other David than last week, because the other David last week was the new positive. Well, David, this is the old sick David here. But I only gave him a 6 last week, and I was the lowest rater last week giving him a 6, because I felt, he did make a mistake against Charm. Okay, he admitted it, he changed it at half-time, but still, against a very weak team, I thought, his judgment was a bit poor. So if 6 was the benchmark last week, I'm going to have to give him 4 out of 10 for yesterday, I'm afraid.
Okay.
The Amabrieta obviously change was enforced. He couldn't do anything about that. I guess, in hindsight, he could have maybe brought in Tim Ream if he was fit, as someone who could play that left centre-back role, which would have been the least disruptive change to make. Or he could have put Spearman there, or even he could have put Hutchinson there. We've seen Hutchinson play that kind of role as well. But no, he brought Spearman in and disrupted what was a settled, you know, back three otherwise. So that was a big no-no, as we saw. And then, you know, deciding to pick Tynecliff but play him in an advanced role just behind McCormack. I'm not really sure what he was thinking of there. I haven't seen one person that has thought that there was anything good can come from it, because it's not a role that Tynecliff excels in. Tynecliff is a sort of, you know, more of a holding player who can protect the back four, or a box-to-box man who, you know, is backwards and forwards, but in a sort of back-to-goal kind of role almost. He was lost, Tynecliff, I'm afraid. And then, you know, he compounded it by then making, you know, almost admitting he was wrong by bringing Dembele on.
Right.
And putting Tynecliff to the right wing back role just to kind of try and do the job. And it didn't really help at all. Unfortunately, you know, there isn't anyone else who can play right wing back, apparently, that we have in the club. I mean, I don't think Richards could play there anyway, but I would have thought he would have tried him there. But perhaps, you know, he's got one thing right, Djukanovic, and realised that Richards isn't all that much cop. And if he has realised that, maybe I'll give him extra marks next time. But for me, 4 out of 10, I think he got it badly wrong, and it just unsettled us yesterday, and any chance we had of maybe causing upset was lost.
Okay, and David, honestly, I think you're being fair, and like I've said this, I think Slavisa Jokanovic is going to be the right man for Fulham moving forward. But if we're being completely honest about this one match, I think he got it wrong, and I think he gave a fair assessment. How about you, Curtis? What's your rating for Slavisa in this match? Do you agree with David, or are you higher or lower?
I was 4 out of 10. Tempted to give him 5, but don't think he really earned it. He messed up with the starting 11. We knew that, and Ryan Tynecliff was the main cause of that. Don't know why you would swap Dembele for Ryan Tynecliff. And he's just come back from injury. Needs to maybe find himself a bit more. Dembele, like I said earlier, he can get something out of nothing. A goal to spark us off. Not in the best of form recently, but he can do that poaching role and put pressure on their defenders. So I'm gonna give him 4 out of 10. He hopefully against Reading next week he'll get better and we can go and win at the jet ski, but apart from that, didn't really do it yesterday.
Okay, fair enough from both of you on that, and I actually agree with you guys with your assessment on Slavisa and also on the team in this match. You know, when they play well, we call like we see it. When they don't play well, we do that as well. That's what we're doing here. We have to be honest. So you guys, I thought, gave an honest assessment overall on the players and, of course, the head coach as well. All right, Curtis, this was your debut on Cottage Talk. I want to thank you for joining us. Any final thoughts before you go?
Just a thank you for allowing me to come on, really.
I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. I did. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, my friend. And you're. I just want you to know before you go, you are welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll come back then, soon.
Okay. David, before you go, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just hope I get rid of this bloody cold before next week.
All right, my friend. All right. Good job by both of you. I thought this was a great show. You guys both did a wonderful job of breaking down this match, so I thank the two of you. But it is time to wrap up the show. For David and Curtis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers. Well done, Curtis. We'll see you around.
Thanks.
Well done, Curtis.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look down.